foreclosures will continue.
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
From American Public Media in Los Angeles, good morning. I'm Jeremy Hobson. There's been a lot of confusion about mortgage documents and whether banks will continue to seize homes now we have a bit more clarity. Bank of America, which will report its earnings this morning, announced it's moving forward with foreclosure proceedings against more than 100,000 homes. Some other banks will continue to observe a voluntary moratorium in the wake of allegations that many homes were seized improperly. The question now is, what effect will the foreclosure mess have going forward? From Chicago Public Radio, Tony Arnold reports.
Talk to home builders and you're likely to hear this.
Our number one competitor these days has been the foreclosure market.
That's John Wozniak with J. Lawrence Homes in suburban Chicago. Wozniak says a few years ago, before the housing market blew up, his company was building 36,000 homes per year. This year, it's closer to 3,000. Housing analyst Chris Huckstead is with Metro Study. He says the latest foreclosure mess could give home builders a boost.
With all of a sudden this kind of a red flag being raised on foreclosures, more buyers might be pushed in towards the new home market.
Wozniak is hesitant to celebrate just yet, though.
Stalling the foreclosures that are occurring is only prolonging, the fear or the anxiety.
Wozniak says on the plus side, business is down so much, he can't really be hurt any worse. In Chicago, I'm Tony Arnold from Marketplace.
And let's check global markets. Asian markets closed slightly higher today. European markets at this hour are also up a bit. On Wall Street yesterday, the Dow finished up 80 points at 11,143. So the other day when I flew here from my home in New York out here to Marketplace headquarters in L.A., we got stuck on the tarmac for a while at JFK. Big surprise. But it turns out we can now put a price tag on flight delays. The cost is more than $32 billion a year. Marketplace's Mitchell Hartman joins us now live with the details. Good morning, Mitchell.
Good morning, Jeremy.
So who came up with this and how did they come up with this precise figure, $32.9 billion?
Well, researchers at UC Berkeley working for the Federal Aviation Administration added up all the costs that pile on with a flight delay. So let's say you're sitting on the tarmac. You're not flying to O'Hare or LAX. There's the value of your time. You're waiting. You're not working. There's more time wasted if you miss a connection. Let's say buying an expensive airport lunch, maybe a hotel room.
Yep.
The cost just to passengers totals nearly $17 billion.
So that's $17 billion. We talked about that $32 billion. Where does the rest of it come from?
Well, airlines lose about $8 billion a year. That's extra fuel, paying for crew, time, wear and tear on their equipment. They also don't schedule as many flights because they know that some airports and some routes are prone to delays. Then there's several billion in lost demand. This is people deciding, let's say, to drive, take the train, maybe not go anywhere at all because airport delays are such a hassle. All this delay makes business less efficient. It shaves about $4 billion off of gross domestic product. May sound like a lot, though U.S. GDP totals more than $14 trillion.
All right. Marketplace's Mitchell Hartman, thanks so much.
You're welcome.
Marketplace Morning Report is supported by Reputation Defender, helping doctors, lawyers, and small business owners monitor, protect, and improve their online reputations. ReputationDefender.com. By The Economist, covering news and ideas from around the world and the connections between them. The Economist, on newsstands, in bookstores, and at The Economist online. And by MassMutual, providing insurance coverage for eligible breast cancer survivors at massmutual.com/BC awareness.
We are just a couple months away from expiration day for some key subsidies for fuel-efficient cars, specifically tax breaks for hybrid vehicles and charging stations for plug-ins. From the Marketplace Sustainability Desk, Scott Tong reports.
Here's how a charging station works. Early adopter Rob Neighbor of suburban Washington's already got one in his garage. Neighbor pulls into home in his special edition Toyota RAV4 EV for electric vehicle. He walks over to a 4-foot metal box and pulls out what looks like a ping pong paddle.
And I put the paddle right into the car, which is a lot like putting an 8-track in a tape deck.
Voila, car starts charging. But the charging station costs $2,000. The federal tax credit covers half the costs. And before it expires in January, Jay Friedland at the advocacy group Plug In America wants Congress to renew it.
If you look at all of the technologies, electric drive, actually running the wheels to the ground on electricity is the most efficient way to do it.
Electric cars are a favored child of the government. It also gives loans to alternative fuel car makers and credits to buyers of plug-in vehicles.
There is an element of picking winners. There's no question.
Analyst Michael Liebreich is with Bloomberg Clean Energy Finance.
In the scramble for clean energy, sometimes that's become a little bit forgotten.
He wants the market to pick technology winners, not the government. Because what if a different fuel turns out better? What if tomorrow's game changer isn't even a car?
We must choose. But choose wisely.
We all remember the Indiana Jones movie where evil Nazi guy picks the wrong Holy Grail. Historically, the feds have chosen poorly too, says energy subsidy analyst Doug Koplow. Take biofuels. Washington has poured millions into energy from plants, even though Koplow says the planning process can eliminate forests and land for growing food, a net minus for the planet.
My concern is that a lot of these narrowly targeted parochial subsidies will miss the bigger picture and therefore make it much more difficult to solve the underlying problem.
Koplow prefers policy that's neutral, say taxing carbon emitters to reflect the true cost of carbon pollution. That treats all the alternatives fairly. But for now, that's politically impossible. So electric car companies say, keep up the subsidies for us, as a way to do something now. In Washington, I'm Scott Tong for Marketplace.
And finally, a friendly reminder to the best and the brightest at Columbia Business School. Members of the Investment Bankers Club were sent an email telling them to make sure to do a few things when they go to recruiting events. Not to brush up on credit default swaps or interest rates. They seem to have that part down. They were told to brush their teeth, carry antiperspirant, and no tacky cufflinks. In Los Angeles, I'm Jeremy Hobson. This is the Marketplace Morning Report, where you can wear whichever cufflinks you want to.
American Public Media.
You don't like the government's education policy? Well, you could always try this.
Placing bets on a lot of different ideas, many of which are bound to fail. But that's kind of the point. Fail hard, fail fast, and let the winning ideas rise to the top.
Race to the top. In fact, I'm Kai Rizdahl. When government goes venture capitalist, maybe we all win. Freakonomics Radio is back next time on Marketplace from American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.